Came a good night.
Yesterday.
Last week. We did not meet last week.
We did not meet? We did not.
Yeah.
On the top.
So we finished the mob and we started on the psitha. I warned you, there's a hadama, mob and a psitha. Right? By the time we actually started, excuse me, you're going to have white hair. Okay. More than we've had in the previous sections of the Sefer, we're going to take in this section, we're going to introduce, going to enter the Sech Olomeno Panimi into our own inner world which exists inside the person. And I think if you look at the Sefer, all the way back in the introduction to the Sefer, he asks, why is the name of the Sefer Alei Shur? What does Alei Shur mean? So Alei Shur is based on the pasuk we have when Yaakov was giving the blessing to his sons, to Yosef, he called Yosef, he said Alei Shur. So what does Alei Shur mean? So Rashi over there says it means to says Tupshatin. One, he was above. Shur is a word for the word to see. Okay, one of the uses of the word Shur, which means to see. So Alei Shur means he was above sight. Well, so one Rashi says it means that he was above the Ayin Hara. One Rashi says over there that when he was going out when he went out over Mitzrayim and the viceroy in his chariot, all of the women would clamber up to the walls to see him. They would go up to see. She says that in the first volume, much more than the second volume, it says, I can't adequately describe and make you understand what this world is all about. I can give you a glimpse. And my goal of the whole Sefer is to give you a glimpse. Right? We can try, and because I'm trying to use words to describe a world which, if you've seen it, you get it. If you haven't, it's very hard. You don't get it. Right? It's a saying. If you don't get it, you don't get it. Right? Right? So. So the issue of, I think out of all of the sections of the Sefer, this is the one where that concept of that we're gonna grapple for words to explain something which, if you've seen it, it almost doesn't need explanation. If you haven't seen it, it's very hard to really. And he's going to try. So his goal is to give you a glimpse, right? Okay. Hein so'adno rishon, sadeno rishon, revasena protisu, lilmud ki ani zeu olamolet. The first step about this our personal avoda is understand that each human being contains a world inside of himself. Furthermore, when I say that there's a world, ein ho ani, the person's ani, person's self, it isn't rak oisiv teguvos al misrachish mechutzalot, a response to what occurs outside of himself, and the oisiv shifus l'masha chutzmano, and it is not only a compilation of my desires, what I want to get out of the world which is around me. Loy, no, that's not what it is. Wani atzmi hino erlam achai chayim atzmi. It is an independent existence. Now, the next paragraph gives us an interesting point. Miroy bnei adam nelam kliel erlam pnimizet. Most people are not even aware this world exists. They don't really know that it exists. This world inside the person. Most people live their world life outward focused. They're almost afraid to focus inwards. Even for just a short period of time. Most They're scared to meet themselves in the mirror. So I remember once seeing this comment by Rabbi Twersky, Rabbi Dr. Abraham Twersky. So he writes about he was living a very, very intense schedule. He's running his Gateway medical program for drug rehab and writing books, speaking, etc. He thought he needs to relax. So he signed up for some type of I don't remember the exact details, but some type of a spa situation where there's hot sulfur baths, which are supposed to be very, very relaxing. And he goes there to the place, they put him into the thing, and then it's warm with the minerals, etc. And he feels every muscle in his body relax. And it's just like, it's wild, it's gevaldig. After 15 minutes, he feels like really refreshed. He starts getting, you know, getting ready to leave. His attendant says, no, you have to stay for the treatment is for an hour. So he says, but I'm ready to go. So no, the treatment's for an hour. He says the next 45 minutes was Gehenna. Right? Because he was like waiting to get out of there. And he said, what was the issue? What was he grappling with? He says he was realized he was scared to stay with himself. He was so busy defining himself by what he's accomplishing and what he's doing and who he's interacting with. He was so used to defining himself by the world out there that the idea of spending 45 minutes with himself without the world out there was so overwhelming that he was in pain. He says, and that was a tremendous insight into himself and to the world around us, that how we do that. I think that his hour was 45 minutes. Excuse me for being, maybe bringing down the number to a little less. Rav Aaron is very, this issue with Baruch Hashem is very good. Rav Aaron is very good at getting inside of his own world. Right? So, Rosh Hashanah, before Tzkiyah Shofar, so he speaks for half an hour about some idea that a person should think about himself. And then they give an announcement before Tzkiyah, we're going to pause for 1 minute, and you're going to think about this idea for 1 minute. And excuse me for maybe being sacrilegious, but I think most people in this room cannot hold on to a thought about themselves and this idea that he's presenting for 60 seconds. Their mind will wander within 60 seconds. Their mind will wander about, something else, whatever. So,
you have to have it in the first place.
What?
You have to have it in the first place to even
right. It's like, even if we get to the point where that the message is a message which talks to us, to hold on to that thought for a full period of time and think about who we are and what we are and what that means to me and how I want to define what I really am. It's challenging for us. We live in a world which is so outward focused. I think in any generation we are the most outward focused generation which exists. It exists on the face of this earth possibly. We're so connected outwards. It's interesting. I once heard a sheer speech by Rabbi Dr. Nathan Lopez Cardoza. So he used to be in Rosh Hashanah, now he has his own place, and he moved a little bit. Interesting, he's an interesting fellow, he has his own cheetahs and different things. Fascinating fellow. And so I agree with everything that he stands for. But he spoke in Cleveland one time, I went to hear him. And he spoke about the idea of that. I mentioned this before. He spoke about the idea of the purpose of sleep. Why did Hashem create sleep? Why did God? Why can He make us so we can rejuvenate constantly without sleep? So the Medrash asked the question, and the way he paraphrased the point of the Medrash is that the Medrash says that the angels, the Malachim, looked at Adam Rishon, and Adam Rishon was such a powerful being. Adam Rishon, they thought he was God, and they're ready to, say Kedusha in front of Adam Rishon. Person says, that's not good. Person put him to sleep. Says he puts him to sleep. He's not God. God doesn't go to sleep. That's what the Medrash says. She says, certain people believe that the world stands on their shoulders. And, if they don't do it, the world's going to fall apart. And they go to sleep. They wake up 6 hours, eight hours later, and the world's still standing. It's a very important lesson for us, that idea that we can go to sleep and it tells us we're not God. Then he says, Shabbos is a state of this element of sleep in a state of being awake. For 35 hours, we walk off the planet Earth. We stop doing and accomplishing and running and defining. And we come back and it's still there. That was his definition of what Shabbos. He says, I would like to make a bracha, Chazal Shem Masak and a bracha, for the pleasure of unplugging the phone in Erev Shabbos. That for 25 hours the phone will not ring, I will not answer it, and the hanoah is such a great hanoah that there should be, must be some bracha of birchas and a hanan, turning off the phone. Right? I can tell you nowadays that many people, it's not a birchas and a hanan, it's painful to be disconnected for 25 hours. With their phone, from their phone, from their texting, from their interacting, from their being connected. So that means they're not living in a chayim panimim. They don't have a chayim panimim to live in. That they're looking forward to the whole world, whole week, to get away from all the things that are distracting them away from what I am, what I want to be, and who I am. And they're busy saying, I define myself by all that interaction. When it's gone, I'm in pain. So I'm waiting for when Shabbos will be over that I can, you know, I feel that, you know, it's embarrassing, you know, I bring my phone with me to Mincha because I've gotten halacha shaylos, you know, phone calls or texts 5 minutes before Shkia. You know, somebody's rushed to the hospital, what are we allowed to take to the hospital with it? Okay. Rosal takes the phone with him to Mincha. Okay. There's many people take the phone with them to Mincha also. Like, you know, Shabbos soup, white shirt. They still got the phone. What do you need the phone when you go to Mincha? One less text of Kedusha that you want to send out a message of learning Torah before you go into Shabbos. I don't know. Okay, my point is that the Musar should work. That's your own, you give yourself your own Musar. My point is, that's just like, it's a way for us to relate a little bit to what he's saying. The person who lives inside that world, on the other end of the spectrum, I read when I was a kid, I don't remember the name of it, I once read a fascinating science fiction novel, which was an old Spanish novel translated into English, and the fellow who was writing it says he remembers when he was a kid, his father read it to him and he loved it. He finally found a copy of it when he was older, and he realized that the thing was like 900 pages. It was the most boring book ever to read because the author loved writing detail. There's so much detail you lost the story. He says, rewrote the whole story, taking out all of the intricate details and just writing the main plot with a little bit of detail. So it ended up being like 200 pages long. It's about this fellow who was being caught by the government and was being punished, you know, with all these horrible tortures, and how he survived all tortures by going off into his own world, his own mind, when they were torturing him. So he didn't feel the torture. So finally they came up with this machine which they put stuck inside of his ears right there, and when the torture started, they started blasting thoughts into his head. And he wasn't able to go. And then the torture got to him. And that was like, you know, that was like real, you know, pleasant, you know. Like as all, you know, good, gory science fiction novels are. Right? You know, but you read these stories about, I mentioned this book called Sabota. Sabota was about a Lubavitcher Chassid who lived in communist Russia, who was in prison for keeping mitzvahs. And he spent 20 years in the gulags and the labor prisons. And he never was Mechallel Shabbos once. And you can imagine that the Russians were very excited about that. So they, you know, gave him horrendous punishments. Eventually, after 20 years, they released him and he came to Israel. Remember him. You can...
The one whose son learned...
That's somebody else. That's Rabbi Zilber. So this fellow... You read the book, and it's excruciating to read the book after a while. Like, you know, so basically the story goes, he comes to prison X, refuses to keep Shabbos. They do torture X to him, torture Y to him, torture A, B, C, D. They throw him into this prison. It doesn't work. They figure 6 months a year. They try and break him. It doesn't work. They give up, throw up their hands, and they send him to the next prison. And the story starts over again. And that's how the book reads. So after by chapter 26, you're like, I can't read this anymore. Because it's just so painful. How did he do it? He had a world inside of himself which he needed to interact with the world to survive. He lived in his own world. He lived in a world where he and a Kodesh Baruch Hu were real, and everything else around him wasn't real. That wasn't what the world was really about. So in that world, he functioned. He did not need to have interaction. He was in solitary confinement the vast majority of his 20 years, because that was part of the punishments. The guards would not talk to him. Right? And he decided, no problem. So he learned, he davened, he sang, he thought about mitzvahs, he did as much as he could under the circumstances, and that's how he lived. He had such an inner fortitude, an inner strength of a reality inside of himself that he didn't need the world to be able to function. So he didn't have the world, he still functioned. So, that's like all the way the full extreme of what he's trying to accomplish. So we don't want to get there, we're not ready to get there yet. We don't want to be tested with that, obviously. Furthermore, that's the one more paragraph of telling us how much we're not there. Okay. Kulonu Trudim Ba'olam HaMaisa. We are very busy with the world of doing things, action. Muskul Rishon Omer Lanu. Our first, when we approach an issue and we have this first inclination, the way we accomplish is by building the world in the different avenues, in different areas of our life. We accomplish. By accomplishing the world, we will grow. And that allows us to get our place in the world. Ulam, however, a person who's a believer who has depth to him, as opposed to a believer who doesn't have depth, right? There's maminim, but they're not mamikim. So the maimin, if we have true emunah, and we think about what the implication of that emunah is, so all of a sudden this world there's a question which comes up. What exactly is our role in this world? The Bereshit made a world. Like, what exactly did he want out of the world? He wanted there should be more houses? Probably not. He wanted there should be more cars? Probably not. He wanted I have a better, nicer car? Probably not. Again, not the Muslims are like, what is it all about? The Bereshit runs the world. He can do everything. The Bereshit can get the world to everyone he wants to accomplish without my contribution. What in the world does he need me for?
He means even to build yeshivas.
Even to build yeshivas, right? Whatever has to be accomplished, the Bereshit could, without going poof, it's poof, and all of a sudden there's yeshivas springing up in every corner, and there's people learning Torah without the mashgiach yelling at them. Doesn't need the mashgiach yelling at them. It can happen anyway. So what is the purpose of our actions? Okay, the only answer we can really give is kizeh rakzeh. This is the answer. The purpose of Russia created the world not because he needs our actions, but that it's for us to accomplish, us to become greater people, which means we become, we get our hashlam, our completion. And the Bereshit made a world where that's done through us doing actions. So Bereshit gave us a soccer field to play in, because we need to run around the soccer field and get stronger by playing soccer. So our soccer field is called mitzvahs, right? And the field, the ball is mitzvahs, and that's how we run around and get stronger. And the field is the world. But other than that, like, what's it for? Ilazos. Davka bal meisim chayv l'tapeach or l'moya panimi. Vayvim shemasav yechaskas panimi usoy. Habari and Zokah l'maseinu. So that the meisim can't be the focus, because the meisim are just a vehicle to get to what's the two? It says the only two can really be that we create that world which we spoke about. In that world, I have a clarity of the center of the connection which I have as a human being with my Creator. I understand that everything I'm doing is a way to fortify that. If I don't understand that, so what am I fortifying? It's like, you know, it's like the guy who's running around the field. He's fortifying and strengthening himself, etc. But what's the game? Like, what's the goal? Like, so he's running back and forth. Like, what do you do with this ball at the end of the day? Right. So we're doing all these actions, but what's the purpose of the actions? Well, we're doing a lot of actions. So Russian likes mitzvahs. Russian has a lot of hanukkah. We do mitzvahs. Like, you know, that's how we answer. So that's one level, because Russian does have hanukkah, because he enjoys us getting our exercise. Like, the father enjoys the father getting the exercise. But so Russian enjoys us doing mitzvahs, because then we're good boys. Right? But I still don't know what my goal is. So what is it? My goal is giving the Bershom Hanoah, but it's like begs the question. Bershom made it, he enjoys his doing it. We do because like giving him pleasure, and he enjoys his doing it. So we have this back and forth game. But like, where does it end? It ends when we understand that the purpose of the Maisim is to create a world of when we have a connection to him. That's the purpose. That the connection to him is inside of ourselves. Okay. If you became smart, it was for you, it wasn't for Kadosh Baruch Hu. Velatzto, if you made Litzanus, Levatisa, you'll carry that burden yourself. Imchatasa, if you sinned, Matifa, by what, how have you affected him with a capital H? Rabbi Mashiach, Peshoach, even if you increased your Peshoim, which is your rebellion against the Kadosh Baruch Hu, Matasloi, what have you done to him? Bershon says, wow, I feel so pained. You hurt me. Bershon says, it doesn't affect me. If you did righteous, Matitlo, what have you given to him? What will he take from your hands? So the goal is to create this reality called man. The Bell line says the fascinating thing. He says, people think that Judaism, you know, religions are theocentric. He says, because the folk under Kadosh Baruch Hu says, I'm not talking about the religions, but Judaism is not theocentric. Judaism is man-centric. There's very little talks about Olam HaBa, talks about the philosophy of God. That's really not the conversation about the Torah. It's about what it means to be an Adam. The greatness of what Adam is. Now, but our problem is we still translate that in definition of terms of action. The greatness of man is because he can accomplish so much. The big rabbi accomplishes a lot, the little rabbi accomplishes less, you know. Right? He says, it's still a layer before you need to go. You need to go, that you have to understand that you have to create a world. I was talking about this a little bit on the page. In a very, you know, I said it in a very, very basic way. You know, a lot of our challenges in life is because we're lacking a definition of who we are. I spoke about this idea by the Seder. The person sits by the Seder. He's really sitting together. There's a concept called Tzibur Lo Meis. The congregation of Klai Yisrael never dies. The people change, but the body, the corpus of Klai Yisrael never dies. So we're all part of one body. So I and Rabbeinu HaKadosh and Moshe Rabbeinu, and we all are part of the exact same Seder table. We all sit at the exact same Seder. We're sitting by one Seder. It's spread out over many, many years. We're all part of one reality called Klai Yisrael. If I understand that's who I am, so the challenge of, I want, you know, if you would really absorb that, that that's what you are, there'd be very little which is outside which is going to tempt you to, I want to become alike. You know, it's like the Queen of England saying, you know, I wish I was. I wish I was, you know, what do you mean wish you were? Whatever you want, you are. You're it. You know, okay, nowadays maybe not. You know, imagine the Queen of England 500 years ago. Whatever she wanted, she was. So that's what I am. I'm a prince of mankind. A part of this thing called Kol HaKalisa, which is the most great, the most glorious thing which ever existed on the face of the earth. And but the glory of Klal Yisrael is that because we sit by side of the table with the Kodesh Baruch. That's what the glory of Klal Yisrael is. So that's what he's trying to say. That's inside of it's not a frumi thing. It's like there's a world inside of ourselves which we're and times of tremendous difficulty and stress, people become aware of it. A person, well, somebody's very sick, and they're sitting in the hospital, and all of a sudden they have this moment of this epiphany of, you know, talking to Kadosh Baruch Hu, not doing anything, just having this really feeling that they really Kadosh Baruch Hu is right there, and they can talk to him, and they have the strength and the power to connect directly to him. That's the world he's talking about.